Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The recent spike in COVID cases took a lot of people by surprise and left us wondering how variants of the virus continue to linger in the community. The latest wastewater monitoring figures from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre show that the level of COVID in some parts of Ireland is as high as during the 2021 winter surge. To take a closer look at this, joined in studio by Professor Bob, biochemistry at Trinity College Dublin, Luke O'Neill. Very good morning to you, Luke.
Good morning.
Are you surprised by these numbers?
Not really. We knew this was happening. I mean, there's been evidence for the past few months of a surge going on, you know. And we all know somebody now who has COVID lately. I do anyway. I'm sure you do as well. So it's been building and building. There is this summer, so-called summer surge happening. But it's slightly disturbing, this morning's news, that it's as high as the big surge in 2021, when we all remember in the thick of it, you know. So there's something going on there that this is spreading more and more.
The wastewater monitoring is an absolutely fascinating public health initiative because it's so non-invasive, but it is statistically reliable, is it?
It is, yeah. That was a great development. It began about even before the pandemic. You could taste these, test these things in wastewater.
Yeah,
We shed this stuff, obviously. It goes into the sewage system, and very high sensitivity PCR tests can be done to find any virus, any bacteria in the wastewater. And it's a predictor, because if it starts to go up there, it'll probably start to go up in the community, and then you might take certain actions, was one idea. And now in Ireland, there's 29, 30 centres. They take samples and they measure, and they've seen the virus going up in those samples.
Okay, so what? How prevalent is it?
Well, it's this flirt. It's a great name, by the way, isn't it? The flirt variant, right? It's hard to know because obviously everybody's not testing. Like, it's not as if everybody's going down their pharmacy and buying an antigen test anymore. So it's very hard to say how many have it. But anecdotally, a lot of people have picked it up. But it's like the cold. I mean, the symptoms are mild in the vast majority because your immune system is there to protect you. So therefore, anybody with a sniffle or a cough, there's a good chance that they've got, they've re-caught COVID again. Maybe one in three, they're talking about, of colds that are out there at the moment might be caused by this
and
variant.
Is our previous exposure the thing that is now limiting our symptoms to a runny nose and a little bit of a throat?
Precisely, yes. So the virus has changed, as ever. It changes as it mutates, this flirt variant. The FLRIT, by the way, they're amino acids. F is phenylalanine. These amino acids have changed in the protein, and they're calling it flirt as a result. It can slightly dodge the immune system because it's changed. It's in the spike protein. That's where the changes have happened. And we have antibodies to those spikes. But of course, if the spike changes, the antibodies bind less tightly and they can slightly get around it, but not so much that it goes into your lungs and causes severe disease. The immune system is slightly less, but it's still strong enough to stop you developing very severe symptoms.
Okay. So if it's just a runny nose and a bit of a sore throat, what harm?
Well, the big worry would be if it's rampant in the community, it'll keep mutating. And not just in Ireland, all over the world. And maybe an even worse mutant will emerge that'll be more effective at dodging the vaccine. And now that's not happening at the moment, but it's one to watch. That's one reason. Secondly, it is still debilitating. Even though you might have had COVID, you might be vaccinated, you might get severe symptoms. And that can happen because the dose of virus is higher or whatever, a bit of bad luck, you know. Some people are getting quite ill with it. That's another slight. The good news is that there's not an increase in hospitalizations happening. We don't think. There's nobody in the ICU, so that's all really good. And that's what you watch for, to see if there's an increase in the burden in the hospital system, and that doesn't seem to be the case.
How much mutating has the virus done since the peak, since variants like Omicron that were doing an awful lot of damage?
Yeah, huge amount. We thought initially, if you go back to the early days, our hope was it wouldn't mutate that much. It looked like a pretty stable virus. That was the assumption. Science then reveals, no, hang on, this thing can mutate. And there's loads of mutations, like tens and thousands and thousands of them. They can be in places that don't count. It doesn't matter if it's somewhere well away from the action, you know. The worry would be these things like the spike, if that begins to change, because they're the main things that our immune system will fight these its weapons at. So again, it's one to watch how much mutation. And our own immune system, by the way, puts the virus under pressure to mutate. because the virus wants to avoid the immune system. So it's a strange paradox that even though the immune system protects us, it can sometimes force new variants to evolve, survival of the fittest, to get around the immune system. It's a constant battle, actually, but all through, not just COVID, all through history between us and infectious diseases.
I thought that it was in the virus' interests to reach a friendly equilibrium with its host, where it's not doing too much damage, but just enough that it can continue to propagate and spread.
It doesn't really have a brain. That's the problem. It's completely random. If the virus can spread, say, from me to you and make me really sick, it doesn't care because it's spread to you and it carries on, you know. So there isn't necessarily any reason why it's going to get more and more mild, strangely. The main thing, it appears to be mild because our immune system is activated and that gives you less symptoms. So the main reason for a disease to get less severe is your own immune system has now kicked in and can now stop the symptoms from emerging.
Okay. Bottom line here, though, is if the numbers are the same as in 2021, winter of 2021, what should we be doing? What public health initiatives should we be putting in place?
Well remember, back then, the vaccination campaign had just started. There were loads of people who had no immunity. Hence, they got very severe disease. So it was a different scenario back then entirely. Now, we've all had it, most of us, which means our immune systems have done its job. And the immune system will remember that encounter. Secondly, we're all vaccinated, the vast majority. And that combination of vaccine plus infection gives you the best possible outcome in terms of your immune system. So we're in a much better place. Overall, there's a very simple message. But you've got to get on with your life. Your immune system is protecting you. Remember that. Now, if you're vulnerable, very importantly, over 80, certain underlying diseases, if you're immunosuppressed, you will be slightly more cautious because your immune system isn't as good anyway. In those people, the message is if you feel really sick, go to your doctor immediately, especially if you have breathing problems. That means the virus is now getting in, you know, meaning to affect you. But for the vast majority of us, get on with your life. Your immune system is doing its job.
Get on with your life with one, I hope, important culture change that has taken place since then. If you're feeling sick, stay at home. Don't struggle on. Don't be a hero because you're not doing yourself or anybody else any favours.
Exactly. Now, the other slight worry is long COVID, remember. And long COVID, 1 in 10 have it. Horrible, debilitating situation for many people, severe fatigue. That's a concern. Anybody can get that. You mightn't die of the virus, but you might develop long COVID. That's one to watch as well. So therefore, there's a reason to try to avoid getting it, and that is to avoid long COVID. And you're dead right. If you got symptoms, stay home. The usual advice that we always have, and stop it spreading then is the trick here, to try and limit the spread overall. But long COVID remains a significant concern.
At what point should people go to their GPs, or should they just self-isolate straight away?
Self-isolate, treat like a normal cold. You know, you might
bit of ibuprofen, bit of paracetamol.
Yeah, the flat 7-Up
box setting in front of the TV.
There's no evidence for flat 7-Up, but take it; it won't harm you. if the big breathing difficulties is number one, because obviously there's something it's gone to your lungs, you know, and that can be very, very serious. So if you feel really ill and feel really off, then go to your GP. But otherwise, stay home, take a couple of days off. You know, if you want to take an antigen test, see if it's COVID or not. That can be useful for obvious reasons, you know. But by and large, it's not that different to a severe cold.
Long COVID, it's perhaps at this stage a bit of an unhelpful catch-all because it describes so many different conditions. But is there any progress, any breakthrough in any area of this?
It's remarkable, actually. And then we began talking about this as scientists when it first began to emerge in 2020-21. It seemed to be a feature of this disease. More people were getting these post-infectious symptoms than, say, the flu. Now, any virus will do this to you. They're called post-viral fatigue, for instance. But this one seemed to be a bit worse. And that's panned out. This particular virus seems to be especially nasty in terms of the risk of long COVID, 1 in 10 having it. That's a lot of people, right? Now, the good news is massive research has been happening in that time frame, and very significant discoveries have been made. And in fact, last week, a big publication from London, there's probably 5 subtypes, just to make it a bit difficult, 5 different features, right? And they've got biomarkers for them now. You can measure stuff in someone's blood to say you've got type number one, right? And that's quite useful diagnostically. And even more excitingly, one of the biomarkers is called complement. Now, I work on this thing called, it's a funny name, complement, in my lab. It's an inflammatory marker. That goes up in long COVID in people's blood, and that seems to be causing some of the symptoms. There's drugs to block complement. So now there's trials happening with people with high complement and long COVID to try and relieve the symptoms. And that's a really interesting development, because at last we might have it was impossible to treat these post-viral
things. I was going to say, was COVID a silver lining effectively for the people in treatment of post-viral fatigue? Because, you know, everybody knows I had somebody in their life who was just really, really slow to or unable to recover fully from viruses.
You've got it. It galvanised the research community about this post-viral business anyway. And lots of labs began to work, especially in the US, actually. And they're all making discoveries. And almost every week now, there's a new discovery about long COVID.
Well, I suppose with 1 in 10 people getting it,
you can find the patients.
It's now profitable.
That's the other thing. But you can also find the patient. And then secondly, it will translate into other post-viral scenarios, be it chronic fatigue or these various things. And the fact they're finding biomarkers is important, because often people were accused of just, you're staying home because you don't want to go to work. You can measure something in your blood now and maybe even target it. So we're seeing great advances there too.
What's the current advice on vaccines and boosters?
Well, there was a vaccination campaign in the spring, as you may remember, for people over 80 mainly and the vulnerable people. And that happened, that was deployed. There'll be another one in the autumn. So keep an eye out on that. And when the new one comes along, it may be flirt. It'd be sensible to put the commonest variant. It's easy to change the vaccine now. It's very straightforward.
But so, that's for the over 80s and the vulnerable. Yeah. What about the general population? Should we be going and seeking it?
There's no need for the general population anymore, because you're already vaccinated and you've had the infection and you've got over it and your immune system will do its job at its best. So at the moment, it's only for the people who are more vulnerable, and that's age, certain underlying diseases. They're the ones who'll be called for vaccination.
We all became absolutely fascinated, if not indeed expert, in our knowledge of inflammatory conditions after COVID. And there's some particularly interesting research which has identified a link between inflammatory conditions and the aging process.
That's right. Yes, this is another very exciting. This is all over my world last week, but it's amazing stuff. So a paper, again, from London, Imperial College are doing very well on this, a thing called IL-11. Now, IL-11 is a thing called a cytokine, and my lab works on cytokines. Now, cytokines are the messengers of the immune system. There's loads of them. There's about 50 of them, actually. And for some reason, number 11 was shown to go up in aging. And as you get older, you make more of IL-11. And that seems to cause damage to your tissues in the aging process through inflammation that's happening. You know, they call this, this inflammation process, it's a key part of the aging process, I guess. And then IL-11 was the key biomarker. But very importantly, they blocked it in mice. They used mice initially. Mm-hmm. And they extended the mouse's life by 20%. Now, what's going on there is, as it's called, inflammaging is the term we use for this.
Did they extend the mouse's quality of life at the same time?
Hard to ask a mouse if he's having a good time, I suppose. But certainly, the mouse, it's a remarkable study, but if it pans out. So the mouse's muscles were better. You know, their fur was like rejuvenated. All the markers of slowing down aging was in those mice by blocking this thing called IL-11. And that got people's attention.
Is there a law of unintended consequences here by suppressing IL-11?
Yeah, that's a worry. I mean, the concern, will it work in humans is the first question. Now, they did stick IL-11 on human cells and rejuvenated them in a test tube. So it can happen often in our experiments. You do stuff in vitro first. So it does seem to work on human cells outside the body. But the trouble is, what's IL-11's day job? It's to keep the inflammatory process going. You need that in different contexts. And the fear would always be if you tamper with these things, you might get increased risk of infection, for example. Mm-hmm. But in this case, didn't seem to happen. And there might be redundancy with other cytokines kick in to protect you. There could be something specific about IL-11 and the aging process.
At what point in studies like this do people like you have to start asking yourselves the ethical question? Do we want to help people live forever, or do we want to extend people's lives beyond a point at which they might be not happy to still be around?
Yeah, but ethics is not for us scientists, sadly. We do, obviously, it's in our minds a little bit. We're just doing the science. Society can look at these things. In this case, I think it's a win-win, because it's not so much about lifespan, it's health span that you need now. So people can live into their 80s, but they're not doing too well. You know, they're struggling. In this situation, that mouse lived into its equivalent of 80s. Mm-hmm. And it was healthy all that time. So if you can allow someone to live a long and healthy life, that's got to be a good thing. The second thing that was really interesting was the biggest risk factor for cancer is aging, remember. That of all risk factors, aging is number one. The risk of cancer goes up as you get older. It decreased the cancer in the mice as well, which is another effect. As much as fourfold, incredibly. Fourfold less of a risk of cancer in the mice if you block IL-11. And that's another benefit from this. So these things are very exciting, I think, in terms of health.
And if we had been able to get on top of inflammatory conditions in the way that this research is pointing a direction towards now, things like COVID wouldn't have been as troubling, would they?
That's right. That COVID causes damage by driving inflammation in your body, because the inflammatory process is designed to help you fight infection. And this goes out of control in COVID. And hence some of the treatments for COVID are anti-inflammatory. Dexamethasone was a famous one. So that's right. But this IL-11 is funny. It was neglected for a long time. Nobody worked on it. I work on IL-1, number one, for instance. Number 11 had been really obscure. And now this paper has emerged saying this could be the thing in aging. So it's certainly increasing interest in that particular side. Okay.
Completely separately, I have to ask you about the Nipah virus, which has reared its head in India. What is it? How worried should we be?
Yeah, again, I'm watching that, obviously. It's a nasty virus. It's got a 50% mortality. Now, compare that to COVID. Obviously, that's much more severe than COVID. And a child has died of Nipah now in Kerala. So they're watching that closely now. Now, it's caught from bats again, by the way, just like COVID. It's a bit like a measles virus, to be honest. It's in the same family as the measles virus. Goes into your body, probably through droplets. There are similarities here, because it's very severe disease. There's no vaccine at the moment. There's no real treatment. Okay. You can contain it, though, by the way.
No evidence that it's spread between humans.
So there is. That's the worry. It's mainly bats into human, or bats drop and urine on food. Mm-hmm. It gets into pigs, and the pig food chain can get into humans as well. And then human to human is the problem here. But it's quite hard to catch, actually, overall. And it's easy to contain. There have been outbreaks before. Isolation, cull the animals. That's the main way they've managed to contain it in the past. So it's just one being
and
watched.
The child that died, do they know, did he contract it from another human or from contaminated food source?
I think it was food. I think it was a food source that he picked it up off. It's very easy for bats to defecate. I mean, and there was one example of bats near an orchard and some of the apples got that kind of thing. They haven't tracked exactly where he got it from, but I'm pretty sure it was probably a contaminated food source.
So one to watch, beyond that at the moment. Plenty of listener questions for you, Professor O'Neill. Do tests still pick up this new strain of COVID? Flirt, lots of COVID symptoms here, but the tests are clear.
They do pick it up, yeah. Now, it depends on the test. Some are more sensitive than others, but most of the tests will pick it up, especially if you're at the peak of the infection and you take a test then.
Just over a bout of COVID, I was very sick with it and still have a residual cough. Sorry to hear that. There's no question there, though. Moving on, this strain is a really nasty one. It's definitely not a cold. I just had it for the first time and it's more like the original symptoms. Why do people still experience such different symptoms?
That's a really interesting point. Now, for most, it's relatively mild, but a certain percent will get really severe disease. And it's a bit of a mystery because their immune system has kicked in. We think it might be their own immune system is slightly too active, because remember, some of the symptoms of these diseases is caused by your own immune system. It's like friendly fire, like your fever. That's your own immune system that's causing the fever. So some have a slightly overactive response and then they get much more severe symptoms. Secondly, the symptoms develop more quickly with this one because your immune system is ready to go. You know what I mean? So often the symptoms come on quite soon, whereas previously it might take 3 or 4 days, but it's more rapid. But it's just variation.
People aren't washing their hands again, says Peter. I suppose people are touching their faces again, aren't they? It's all sort of normal human behaviour. But yes, it's a good point. Day 8 of testing positive for COVID, says somebody else. Sore throat, fever and now a cough. It's a brutal dose. I have never been so sick, says this 77-year-old.
Yeah.
And after dodging COVID for 4.5 years and fully vaccinated, it finally caught up with me. I thought I was immune. I have to say it's like a bad flu, aches and pains, headache, nausea, coughs and sneezing, testing positive since last Wednesday. Interestingly, how many people do you think are out there saying to themselves, I never got COVID, but they did. They just had an asymptomatic experience.
Well, they've shown that. I mean, they've tested tens of thousands of people and say 100 say I never had it, you will find antibodies in those people. They had it, but it was very mild. You know, they had no symptoms, but the virus, probably most people have had it at this stage. But this variation is interesting. Now, why would some people get severe disease with this? We'd love to know more about them. And it's probably genetic in part. We're all different anyway. You know, but it's true. Some people are being hit very badly by this one.
Okay. Professor Luke O'Neill, thank you very much for coming in to us this morning. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.